7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 10 of Color of Magic. I am your host, Daquan Watson. As always, my co-host here is Brian Allen. How you doing, dude?
Doing good. How you doing?
Man, I'm actually doing all right. I survived Thanksgiving. I was fat and full. I got work in this week, so we're making it.
I haven't jumped on a scale in a week, and I'm scared too.
That's probably the best way to be, honestly. Like, you don't need to know. You just know it's bad news and just leave it at that.
Yeah, just go on and go to the gym.
The best thing, though, is that we are not light for news this week. We have had just a ton of stuff coming through the pipe, and it's just nonstop for Magic, it seems.
All kinds of stuff, just which we're happy about. We have no issue. We've got a surplus of things to talk about.
Yeah, it makes our job easy. So we're going to have a pretty full show. So we're going to try to run down this thing and make sure we don't leave any stones unturned here with all the stuff happening. But to start with, we got to say thank you to a new patron. And this is a name. This is from Belgium. So I apologize for wrecking the name here. But it looks like Michelle Van Herwegen? Herwegen, maybe? Because it's Belgian?
Daquan drew the short straw and had to try to pronounce that.
Well, true. But this is our first non-US patron, so that's also very cool for us.
So welcome to the group. Thank you very much.
Also this week, I put out a video to our patrons just to say thank you, since that is now also our 10th patron. So we're averaging one per episode. Hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I like it.
If we can keep that up, we'll be pretty happy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so one of the things, the reason we did that is we're going to start having some exclusive content go just to our patrons. So they get a preview of some stuff that may be available later on YouTube. Some things are just going to be kind of extra deep dive into conversational stuff. Some stuff just thank you notes. Sometimes we may just be previewing things before we put stuff up for sale, because we've talked about making t-shirts and other cool things, maybe custom sleeves or something. So it's kind of a bonus for just supporting us over on Patreon. So something we just want to offer to say thanks.
It's like our version of Secret Lair. You know, we're gonna have Brian and Daquan with different artwork on their cards, and
yeah, you laugh. We could make that happen. I know some artists.
Okay, I'm down.
let us know. Send us a message. Would you buy sleeves with our likeness and the show logo on them? If so, I will investigate how to make that happen. That feels really pretentious, though. That I maybe setting up to play with sleeves of my own face on them, and that's just weird. So I don't know.
I do pretentious, so hey, I'm telling you. So you want to concede right now? I have my own sleeves. You just want to pick up your deck right now. Walk away.
Fair. Some people might be intimidated by that. Who knows? Or it'd be a good way to get some more attention for it.
Yeah.
Other news. We spent some time talking with TCG Player this week, and we now have an affiliate link set up with them. So if you would like to support the show without spending any extra money, we know several of our listeners use TCG Player. So we will have a link that you can find in the show notes. It'll also be on our website on our buy and support page. You click the link, and when you go there, anytime you search to go buy cards, we will get a small kickback to help support the show. So kind of a cool bonus. We'll see what that turns out for us. I have no idea. It's the first time we've really had an affiliate partner, so we have no idea what to expect. But it's a cool way that you guys get to help us by doing what you already do.
I like it. I like it a lot. It's going to say first sponsor hype. We need we're going to get sponsor sound effect or something. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Here. And that's the other thing, too. We're still looking for sponsors for the show. So if you know of anybody, and it doesn't even have to be in the gaming space, if it's something that pertains to people of color and they just want to support our efforts in this type of show, or you own a business that would be interested in supporting these types of efforts, please reach out to us, because we are open to several ideas, and I like doing creative things and even could do some fun ad reads. So if you have ideas,
we do like a Reverend Ike thing, you know, or we bless somebody's cards or what have you.
We could.
With Saint of the West.
So yeah, that could be a very interesting thing. So yeah, we're looking for a sponsor still, but that's kind of secondary to the other stuff we're doing. It's just as we're starting to develop and get our legs under us a little bit, now we can kind of start moving forward with some of the business ends of things.
10 episodes, people. 10 episodes. It's happening.
Another thing that came up this week is we have some streaming stuff we wanted to talk about. One of the big things is that Twitch Prime had shared on their Twitter account to let everybody know that there is a Liliana Dreadhorde General deck you can get for free. We will include that link in the show notes, but it's actually pretty cool. It comes with that and a couple other useful cards too. It's not like an over-the-top quality good deck because it's still a pre-constructed deck, but it's a deck for free. So definitely hop on and get your copy. It gives you a code. It goes right into Arena and gives you the deck. What do you think about those type of offers and deals when those things come up?
I love those. And I need to mention that, you know, if you have Amazon Prime, you already have Twitch Prime. It's nothing you got to buy extra if you already have Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that's very true. Another thing I want to tell everybody, especially if you are listening to this show right now, which you are, if you have Amazon Prime, go set up an account on Twitch and just give a subscription to one of the people creating great content on Twitch. Even if it's, I mean, we would love for it to be one of us, but even if it's not, give it to somebody, because otherwise that's $5 that Amazon's just going to keep if you don't give it to someone. And the way it works is, I believe now your Amazon Prime subscription is like $120 a year or something. If you give $5 a month, which is what that free subscription you get to give away amounts to, you basically get to take half the money you were going to give to Amazon and dedicate it to an actual person that's entertaining people, helping build the community, or just entertaining you. So it's such a good use to go do that. It's not automatic. You do have to make time to do it once a month, but it really helps the streamers out. And it's a great way to just like take some of that money you were going to give away and put it somewhere useful.
And with all due respect to our kind of sort of boss, Jeff Bezos, he doesn't need much more money. He's doing okay. You know,
that's true. Taking money from Amazon is not something you have to be concerned about right now. Even if we had some 10,000 listeners and they all went and gave their subscriptions away, I don't think Amazon would even notice that on the bottom line, honestly. No. That's not even a rounding error. So, yeah, I don't know. How are you doing right now on your 100-day challenge? Let's just check in on that.
Oh, I believe this is day, I want to say 23, because I've actually stopped putting the number in the video because I found it to be one of those things where, you know, the average person that just came in to see this particular video doesn't care about the challenge. They just want to see this cool play, basically.
Cool. Yeah, we're on day 18 yesterday. So day 19 will be what's coming up of my 60, because I'm weak. But it's actually going really well. I'm averaging a couple of new followers per day. I'm up to almost 200. I think I'm at 185, 186, something like that on total followers. Only getting a couple of subscriptions here or there, but that's still fine. And we're generating a good little community. I think we're averaging 30 to 40 viewers coming through the channel.
That is awesome. Because you've only, when did you start streaming on a somewhat regular basis?
The challenge started 3 weeks ago. So
yeah, that's actually really good.
Yeah, I'd been streaming off and on, maybe like once a week or twice a week here and there when I had time. But this is the first time I've actually dedicated to it consistently. And we're actually getting good results for it. So we'll see what happens at the end of the 60 days.
Because I know people, you know, who've been streaming for a couple of years and still haven't hit affiliate. So, yeah, you're don't be downplaying your numbers. There's people still trying to get where you have gotten to.
Yeah, and I think on a later episode, we'll really talk about some of the things we're seeing that are really helping people, some good tips and tricks, things like that. Because we have had a few people ask, even on my stream, about how do you get started? What do you do to keep people interested? That sort of thing. So I think it'd be really good to kind of help other people out who want to step into that space. So that's a good topic for a later show.
Sounds good.
What did you learn last week?
Oh, believe it or not, folks, there is, apparently this has been going on for years. It just happened to me. Somebody tried to do a sextortion scam on me, and I just found out these were a thing. Yeah, have you heard about these?
No, this sounds exciting.
Basically, they send you this email saying, hey, I hacked your webcam. I've had remote access. and I'm not making this up. Is it, I've got footage of you pleasuring yourself, and I'm going to send it to your whole contact list.
Okay.
Yeah, and apparently, this is, you know, so of course, I immediately went and looked this up because it just had the feel of, yeah, this is obviously some kind of scam email. I'm just trying to figure out exactly what the scam, and then, yeah, it's a thing, and it's called sextortion. And it's like the Nigerian prince scam. Most people don't fall for it, but they keep doing it because if you send out enough emails, enough people fall for it. Dude asked for, like, I want to say a couple of $1,000. So, you know, if you trick a few people into doing that, you've made enough money to, you know, support yourself as a scammer, I guess.
I mean, I guess so. I mean, I don't know. I guess being a nerd, you know, taking the precautions to, like, cover up your webcam or disconnect it when you're not using it, you know, that sort of thing, kind of doesn't leave myself open to that. But part of me is kind of like, well, people know that stuff happens, so, like, whatever.
Like, yeah. They say you're not supposed to respond. I totally wanted to be like, hey, I'm a porn star. Everyone's seen me, you know, naked. See how little about me this person actually knows.
Well, when I get one of those, I'll let you know. I'll drag it out a little bit more.
Because I've seen comedians that do that with telemarketers and scammers, and it ends up being hilarious.
That is crazy.
But one of the things they supposedly say is, yeah, don't respond to them. Don't interact. Just, you know, let it go away.
Man, sometimes it's too tempting. It's like one of those things where, like, like, you know you're not supposed to, but, like, you just can't help yourself sometimes.
Like, when they were doing the whole, this is another scam that's running, where they call you and say, oh, we're with the IRS, and, you know, you owe $10 million or whatever. One of those people called us, and it was during the government shutdown. So, yeah, I totally dragged that out for a while. Like, yeah, you're a really dedicated employee. Or is anybody else in your IRS office? Because you're the only government employee I know currently working.
Yeah, that sounds like a poorly timed scam. They didn't have their stuff together.
Yeah, at least crack a newspaper if you're going to be a professional scam artist, or not. Or I said newspaper. Check a website.
Well, my thing I learned this week is nowhere near as interesting as yours.
Sorry.
What I was messing around with last week in one of my streams, actually two of them, was played some Historic for the first time on Arena. And what I discovered is the Historic format is largely unexplored. I think you see a lot of people playing similar decks, and there's some obvious things there, but then there's a lot of space that people just aren't dabbling in. And I think part of it is there's not, I mean, you still get rewarded as far as, like, leveling up in the ladder, but other than that, I don't think there's reason for people to really put time into exploring, creating, researching.
Breaking.
Yeah, so if you do come up with something, I mean, Historic's an easy way to rank up. I mean, honestly, if you want to get on and just run through some games, if you come up with the best deck, you're probably going to be the only one playing it. People aren't going to be prepared for it. And it was reasonably fun, but I think it's definitely unexplored territory. So it'd be interesting to see as we move into 2020 if Wizards puts extra time, maybe one of the arena events or arena invitationals, I think, or whatever they're going to be called, will actually use the Historic format potentially, and that could be interesting. But until then, I think it's still going to have a large focus on Standard and Draft for the most part.
I could absolutely see that. I hope they do some kind of Historic format in 2020.
It could be interesting. I mean, I think there, like I said, I think there's still a lot of room. Like, for instance, you have a situation where we put out a bunch of knights, but then a bunch of other knights are just rotated out of Standard. But those are still available to you if you want to try to upgrade a deck and play knights in that format, which is possibly really good.
You know that I do want to do that. It's one of the first things I tried every format that I can. I never got past my tribal phase of development. I'm sorry.
But no one's really put time into that. Into Historic, because there's just not a need to. If somebody posts up a good Historic deck, people just go copy that and go play it, because that's the easiest thing to do right now. And understandably so. I mean, there's nobody really, again, there's nobody putting any real time or exploration in the format, so if there's a good deck, just play it, go get you 8 or 10 wins and call it good. Though, I think it's going to lead to a situation where here at the end of the season, you're probably going to have a lot of people jockeying for those top, like, 2,000 slots or whatever it is as more people are able to race into Mythic in these various methods. Because now you effectively have three formats you could play that could take you to Mythic. So that's going to be really interesting to see what the end. I mean, it's 26 days from now, so we have time. But it'd be interesting to see what that looks like at the end of all of it.
I'm hyped. You sold me. I'm going to build a historic deck after we get off of here.
Go for it. I'd love to see it. We can post it up on the website for people to come see it.
Does it have to win for me to do that? Or can I just...
It just has to be interesting. Not every deck has to win. It just has to be fun or interesting so people are at least wanting to try it out or go give it a run or maybe even build upon it, potentially.
Yeah, or then they'll probably help me fix it because there's a lot of good players out there.
More on a more serious note, another thing that we wanted to talk about briefly, and we know this is, I guess, about 2 to 3 weeks old now. We're kind of behind on all the chatter that went on around it. But we did at least want to acknowledge the issue with the recent Magic novels and the Chandra situation. For those of you that don't know, there was a lot of history, and I guess we'll call it canon, I mean, we're the closest thing we have, that had been written to where many of us believe that Chandra was at least bisexual on some level. And the recent novel kind of undid that, really.
Really fast in like a couple of paragraphs.
Yeah, it was kind of abrupt. You're absolutely right. And it obviously started a firestorm that it should. And it was a big talking point on Twitter and social media for a while. And just want to let everybody know, like, this is a thing that happened and we are aware of it. I mean, especially since we talked about the other trans issues and whatever, we didn't want to make a lot of it, like, let this go by and look like we were kind of picking and choosing issues and ignoring the news. Kind of just staying on brand. Want to make sure that people know we saw this. And it was interesting because the writer kind of gave the statement of, well, trying to never really been into girls, but then also showed later in the writing in that same statement that, like, oh, but she had shown some love for Gideon and for Nyssa. So it's like, okay, well, was she or wasn't she?
Yeah. One of those things is not like the other. One of those things is not the same. If I may paraphrase Sesame Street.
And he did issue an apology later that sounds like, I guess at some point there was probably a longer explanation of that. And he did want to bring the thing to a close because I guess there was discussion that Wizards was not going to pursue that further, I guess, because there's other plans for Nyssa right now or soon, which kind of makes sense, I guess, with Zendikar being a thing again soon. But that just didn't happen. And I don't know if that was a combination of Del Rey Press having some editing things that they took stuff out and changed the context of something, and somebody at Wizards not following up to make sure certain things were included. You know, and again, I think we talked about this where it's still somebody's job to check that, right? Yeah. Somebody needs, whether we were shorthanded that day or I don't know, like somebody drew the short straw or whatever, like somebody still should have checked it.
And it's ideally somebody, you know, that's read the previous books and has enough knowledge to go, hey, wait, this doesn't seem, you know, like, for example, they had some kind of character change where, hey, Chandra went Anakin Skywalker and murdered a bunch of kids. Or somebody would say, wait, that seems really out of character.
Yeah, very true. Like, that's somebody's job there. I don't know whose, but it's someone's. Now, I will say, I think the date I found was November 22nd, where Watsi did issue an apology and said that Chandra's going to continue being involved, you know, still love multiple characters regardless of their gender, still going to explore some relationships, you know, so, and I guess there was also an apology from Rosewater that said stuff to the same effect, but basically, those two statements between them, effectively say, like, Wizards realizes the screw up, realizes is not in line with what they want to portray, and they do have some ground to gain to, I guess, regain favor with people that they have let down. So good on them for acknowledging it's a thing. And I'm willing to, you know, call it good for now, but let's see where this goes. You know, let's talk about this again in a year.
And man, they're, whoever's doing their, you know, PR and crisis management, because there's another 10-day gap between, you know, when the novel came out, everybody immediately, well, not everybody, but a lot of people immediately were tearing it apart. And then, you know, it takes 10 days to get a statement out.
Yeah, and let me say this too. Like, we don't want to dive too deep until we have a guest on that's squarely in the gay, bi, non-binary space to talk on this a little bit better. Because again, I think this is a space where like our views aren't going to probably portray this well enough, and I guess aren't deep rooted enough to give the right impact to this. You know, so it's definitely something I want to come back to on a later show that we can talk about. But I also want to say that the writing wasn't all that impressive either. Like, despite the actual issue, the writing left a lot to be desired.
That's been a common complaint that I've read.
Yeah, it was not the best prose I have ever laid eyes on. And honestly, and I'll be fair, like when it comes to fantasy writing or whatever, I've obviously read a lot of different stuff, even fan fiction stuff online, whatever. This was just generally not good. I mean, that's the only thing I'd say about it. It could have used a lot of work.
And it's not like this is a brand new writer. This guy worked on Gargoyles, one of my all-time favorite TV shows, Star Wars Rebels. So it's not like, you know, they brought an intern in to do this. So it's, although TV shows and books are two entirely different things. So.
And that's why I am slightly inclined to believe that it is somewhat of an editing issue where something got taken out or context was not understood and where you ended up was not fulfilling anybody's want or promise.
And also, I've never written a book, but I have written, you know, some excruciatingly long newspaper and magazine articles, and I don't know what kind of deadline he was working with. I don't know if they gave him 2 years to write this or 2 weeks or what. I don't know exactly when the contract was signed or what the details were.
Yeah, I feel you. But like I said, I am willing to leave it where it is for now. But I would like to touch on this again later with an actual guest who I think could speak to these situations better. And then also review down the road kind of what Wizards is doing in that space, you know, months from now, and kind of see, are they making good on that promise? Kind of hold them accountable, I guess.
Yeah, because this is these are issues that, you know, keep coming up. This is 10 weeks in and we've already had two pretty big issues. So this is something we're going to keep covering, obviously.
Oh, and moving on to other stuff. There's more construction outside.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, there's a lot, dude.
Somebody built the highway.
Well, they're doing something. They I don't know if they were building a highway, but they were definitely clearing a path.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
We didn't rehearse it beforehand either. That was improv by him, folks.
Don't give away the secrets.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so for those who didn't see, Pioneer got a lot of stuff banned, which once upon a time, which we kind of knew was coming. Yeah. It's kind of an absurd card anyway. We've already established that. Field of the Dead, which it needed to be. I mean, the way the format was shaping up.
Yeah.
And then Smuggler's Copter. I think once upon a time, we all agree, like, the card's bonkers. Yeah. Nobody's surprised there.
Yeah, it's not meant for you to be able to run five colors and not, you know, suffer some kind of penalty to your consistency.
Field of the Dead, the interesting thing there is you were getting to a space where various decks were just including ways to search for Field of the Dead as a late game answer. So it was kind of limiting what long game control decks could look like, because everybody's end game is just like, oh, okay, well, I'll just go get one or two Fields of the Dead and then we'll just start making zombies. And the way the format is set up, you have enough multi-lands between those and your basics that you can make sure you have 7 to 10 different types of lands and not really hurt your draws or your mana base all that much.
Yep.
Even more so when you combine it with Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
So that was the big problem there. And then Smuggler's Copter was just kind of becoming ubiquitous for every super aggro deck.
Yeah. I mean, all three of these are cards, you know, that have been banned in some form before. So nothing was a huge shock, I would say.
I'd agree with that. I don't think anything here really surprised anybody. We saw the list and all went, okay, yeah. I mean, there's a few people that are a little sad about Smuggler's Copter. I saw a few people arguing that, but ultimately, I think the problem with Smuggler's Copter is it's just keeping other creatures and other things out of the format.
Yeah.
And I think there's enough good aggro creatures that the aggro decks aren't going to go anywhere. They're exactly. still going to be playable. You're just taking away a strong card.
Everything that was wrong with the card the first time they banned it, which I think is what, 2017, I believe, is still wrong with the card.
Yeah, I mean, rightfully so. And it really is as powerful as you think it would be. And I don't blame anyone, right? Like, if you were going to start playing Pioneer, what's the first thing you do? Well, let's look at all the cards that were restricted or banned or whatever in other formats for various reasons and start giving those attention first. I mean, that's the logical starting point. Exactly. So when those cards are still good, thanks to WotC for sooner rather than later coming out and saying, hey, let's go ahead and get rid of them. And we're only going to be dealing with this till like the end of the year. And then once we get into 2020, I believe Aaron Forsyth had posted that they want to get Pioneer on the normal banned and restricted announcement schedule, which is every couple months or whatever. So everybody will be on the same page at that point.
And we'll have to retire the pneumatic drill for a little while, I guess.
Well, for a little while. There may still be problems. We'll see. The format's still developing, so who knows? That does bring up another question, though. And it's, when will Nexus of Fate hit the ban list?
Now, I know they said they're going to slow down. Have they announced the next official date when they're going to
break? Well, between now and end of the year, it's going to be every Monday has an option of having something banned in Pioneer. The interesting thing here, though, is I think universally Nexus of Fate is the only card that I think everybody's okay with going. I may have seen one or two people try to defend Nexus of Fate, but generally speaking, it feels like the population at large playing Pioneer would be totally fine with that card going away.
And that's a rare occasion when there's everybody's like, hey, take it away.
Yeah, I'm kind of on that mindset anyway, right? If enough of the community, I say enough, if you go through an overwhelming majority are saying, yeah, if this card went away, I would be fine with that. Maybe the card does need to go.
Well, I say it's rare. I guess this would be the second time in a month, because Oko had gotten pretty... I played Devil's Advocate as long as I could, but yeah, Oko had gotten pretty much unanimous that people were ready for him to be gone.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, again, almost everybody was saying, like, yeah, the card can go. It's fine. Get rid of it. Things are going to be better. Which, that kind of segues into our next topic. With Oko gone, the list of decks for the Mythic Championship this weekend are pretty cool. So I don't know if you've taken a look at the decks yet. Man, if I can speak. You think I'd be good at it now after 10 episodes.
Ha! You underestimate us or overestimate. One of those.
Yeah, exactly. You're just as bad as I am apparently today. It's all that leftover Thanksgiving turkey.
Yeah, the tryptophan is still in our system. Sorry.
But yeah, I think this is going to be the first real time with top level players that we're going to get to see the impact of the most recent standard bannings. And what's cool is if you go down the list, there's stuff being played that hasn't even had a shot in the last couple months. So you've got like Esper control decks. There's some new blue red flash decks that are going around. And it looks like a couple people registered that. There's just traditional Azorius control that's being played. Obviously, there's some sacrifice decks of different varieties. There's two or three different adventure decks that people have registered. A couple of Simic Flash decks that are making a comeback. You're starting to see more of those. I mean, it's just all over the place. I mean, even Ken Yukihiro, who always makes interesting decks, is doing a five-color Fires of Invention deck. So that'll be fun to watch. Hopefully that ends up on camera a couple of times.
Without Once Upon a Time, he's still running the five-color Kool-Aid.
Yeah. I mean, but that's what I'm saying. There's all these decks that this kind of shows you when you had those two or three oppressive cards, it was keeping all the rest of this down. And it was really boring. I say boring. Like, the games themselves were good in the sense that you're watching the top players have to skillfully outmanage each other. And that's one level of fun in and of itself. But I think the problem is that's only fun for the most engaged and usually the most competitive of players, because they understand those intricacies. They understand what's going on that level. But for the average person and the average player to just want to tune in and watch, like, they want to see decks that are doing different things, or decks similar to decks they play, or they just don't want to watch the same mirror match for the fifth time that day or the sixth time that day. So I think this is going to be a really good viewing experience. I think you're going to get to see tons of cool interactions. There's a few kind of quirky new cards that some people are trying out, which would be kind of neat. I mean, I think overall this is going to be so much more of a positive experience than the last Mythic Championship. You know, and it's funny we're saying that because the last Mythic Championship was only a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Back in my day when we had Mythic Championships, you know.
Yeah, here's another interesting thing that's happened and that I've noticed from streaming on the 60-day challenge is I've had several people come into my stream that are brand new. Matter of fact, one of them has only been playing for a week.
Oh, wow.
And at least two that have said, well, they played in like 2000, one played in the mid-90s, and they haven't played since, and they're just coming back this past year. And it's largely because of other games they're playing. They saw some of the stuff pop up on social media. They saw it pop up on Twitch. And they went and started watching the covers and seeing the decks. But I think people underestimate how important it is for these formats to stay diverse and interesting.
Yes.
So people have something to talk about and we can celebrate it. And they can see the different cards and the different decks and understand how different things work. You know, why these decks are being played versus, you know, whatever it is, 60, 70% of the field showing up with the same deck to play each other.
And kudos to whoever, you know, was selecting the matches that appear on screen, because they are giving full effort to try to make sure it wasn't all Oko mirror matches. But when 70% of the field is playing them, it's just, it's hard to do. But they were doing the best they could with, you know, what the format was giving them to work with.
I that's a real good point. I got to give credit to the people over at Wizards that are organizing that, because there is a level of extra work and research that has to go into literally looking at pairings and, okay, who's still relevant in the standings or near the top that we can put on camera to make day two or whatever, that isn't just playing another Oko deck. And that's not the easiest thing to find when, you know, in that particular bracket might be up to 80% of the same deck.
Yeah.
But I also think it's cool because in some ways, maybe some people got on camera that wouldn't normally, and they're getting recognition for it. So I appreciate that. You know, put the people on that are trying harder and being different.
Exactly. It's always, you know, more fun to watch future guests for us. You know, I view everything as a content creator now. It's that. I know. It's like, hey, can I interview you?
No, that's totally fine, though. I mean, I think this is how we find these people. I think it's great for those people that are doing brand building for themselves and trying to get more sponsors or build up teams or whatever it is. And we still have this. This I like because people got to do their research. You basically had, what do we call it? Like 2 weeks, because they had to submit their decks well before the event, obviously. So they effectively have had 2 weeks to learn a new format, put the time in, build their deck, do their testing, all that stuff. And then put this on the line for many of them to decide if they're going to be in the NPL or Rivals League next year. I think this is the way I want to get, like, if I'm one of these players, this is kind of how I'd want it to happen. Like, yeah. I would have been more upset if I was in their position and it's in, like, Oko Fest 2019 where everybody's a bunch of mirror matches. But, like, here, it's like, okay, cool. I got to go in, build a deck to my style with cards I enjoy. I researched a format. I got to gamble on whatever sideboard cards I want. Like, this feels like more of an individual effort that you're really getting to put in your personality and go for it with your potential, I don't know, 2020 financial life on the line.
For people who don't understand how hard this is, you know, take whatever your favorite game is that you like to watch as competitive. Oh, and by the way, right before the playoffs start, change one of the rules. It's just like, let's say the New Orleans Saints rule of pass interference, and then that happened at the start of the new season. It happens right before the playoffs start. Imagine what that would be like.
Well, I mean, it's like, let's say you played Halo competitively or one of the other first-person shooters or whatever, and then you find out 2 weeks before, okay, we're adding three new weapons and a new map. Like, okay. Yeah, exactly. You've now got to figure out how all that works in that 2 week window and be ready to go come game time. And actually even take it a step further, because all of these players submitted their decks a week ago. So it would be almost like you got the three new weapons, you got the new map, and we're going to make it to where you can't use any of those the week before the event. So you can't even practice anymore, really. I mean, you can, but you're going to be practicing with an outdated format.
Yeah. It's like when somebody, you know, has a mobile quarterback and your team doesn't have one, so you get some random, the punter's going to run, play Lamar Jackson in practice. Nah, I promise you he's not.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's all really interesting. I'm looking forward to it. The tournament should be started by the time people are listening. Oh, well, it'll be starting very shortly after this episode goes live. So it'll be interesting. I will definitely be catching a lot of coverage over the weekend. I'm probably going to have it on my phone wherever I go, because I'm really looking forward to it. This is the first time in a while I've been really excited. Like, I've enjoyed watching coverage. I watch a lot of Magic coverage when it's on, but this feels different for some reason. That, like, we're getting, this feels like the real standard format we should have had for the last 6 weeks or whatever. And also it feels, I don't know, like, you know, some people refer to it as like, well, now it's like the Magic Hunger Games. I'm like, well, kind of. But really, I think this is what comes with it, right? When you say, people say they want more money in Magic, they want more recognition, they want people to be able to make a living. I think this is what comes with it, right?
We can't Hunger Games. Sorry. You'll have to go in there and kill each other. That's how that works.
Well, yeah, it's tough because it's hard to say that there can be a huge open system where everybody can qualify and everybody can make money, because then at what point do people stand out and get that extra recognition, to get the extra money, get the extra sponsorships? Like, it becomes harder and harder. But here, people are invested to watch now. You know, like, somebody winning or losing in the last round this weekend could be the difference of them being in the MPL or not.
Yeah.
Like, every match might actually count.
And this is the discussion they have, you know, like, let's say with the NCAA tournament. Daquan, do you think it's more important, you know, for people to see the established stars? Or is it more important for people to have that dream of, hey, anybody can win?
I think, and people may hate this answer, but to sell the product, you have to be able to see the name brand faces. But I do think giving the opportunity for people to become one of those name brand faces, or recognize, in the case of NCAA, like schools or brands or whatever, is also important. But to get people to tune in, to sell those tickets, to get people amped up about the tournament and the brackets and all that stuff, you need to see those established brands.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be wrong. I say wrong. I think Wizards would not be doing themselves any favors by not making sure that, like, Andrea Mengucci is on the stream, that somebody like Brad Nelson is on stream, that even Autumn Burchett is on stream, like, having won a Mythic Championship earlier this year and being very vocal and active on social media. Like, and it's unfortunate because there are other players that are equally skilled, but they're just not as much of a presence.
And by the way, you can be a presence, you know, it can be because people love to watch you or because people hate to watch you, as long as they're watching you.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic I think we can touch on at some point in the future. Is it's kind of okay to have villains. I just think it's like, there's a fine line though, right? Like, you want somebody to be the heel, but you don't want them to be, to pardon my language, but to be an outright a-hole.
Exactly, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I get yeah, you. All right. So this dude talks a little too much smack while he plays, or he puts funny memes of his opponents online or whatever after he beats him or whatever. Like, all right, that could be a person that I'm like, dude, come on, really? But you kind of enjoy hating that person. But then if that person was just like, I don't know, talking crap about somebody's mom or putting a bunch of, I don't know, chauvinistic material online or whatever. Okay, like now you're just an outright jerk and that's not cool. But I get it. Like, we want everybody to be nice. We want everybody to be humble. But some of it's competition, and some of that just naturally bubbles to the surface as these rivalries get built between different people, different teams. And we're probably going to see more of that, I think, as this whole MPL and Rivals thing goes on, because you're going to have people.
Absolutely. I think we're going to see that.
Yeah. People are going to move back and forth between them. I think you're going to have people that are struggling to not fall out of either one of them. And then some people may, you know, have some animosity between each other. What if you get in a scenario where someone gets bumped out twice or prevented from getting into the MPL twice because of a matchup with the same person?
That's the stuff that legends and rivalries are made of right there.
Yeah, so I'm saying, and that'd be good stuff to promote, right? Like, that's not bad.
No. Sometimes somebody just has your number. You could be one of the best players in the world, but there's another person that, for whatever reason, they got you every time. You may not even know why, you know?
Yeah, so I'm in on it. I think this is going to be a fun event. I hope people tune in. I hope this works out for everybody involved, like the fans, the players, Wizards, the sponsors, you know, because this is one of those things that if it works, we look back at this and say, this was kind of the beginning of the new modern competitive Magic scene. It effectively starts this weekend.
We just had to ban a few things. You know, we just had to take a few hits.
Yeah, everything's a learning process. Hopefully we don't repeat all of the craziness in 2019 and 2020.
We're not going to make the same mistakes. We come with the different ones every time.
Well, yeah, you make new mistakes. That's fine. So moving on, we kind of wanted to round up on something this week on Dinner Table Talk. Now, one of the things that comes up a lot, and this kind of comes back to one of the reasons we started this show to begin with, is we talk about, you know, POCs and just minority groups in general being feeling unwelcome or being left out for various reasons. And you know, we talk about people weren't necessarily doing anything, and that's kind of one of the reasons we hopped in here. But one of the things that comes up in discussion is, okay, people want to know what could they do specifically to make spaces or tournaments or social media or whatever, just the community, more inviting to these groups. And I thought that would be something interesting to talk about. Because having fortunately been in that space, you know, one of the things I would say, especially to business owners, whether that be hobby store owners, if they own any of the manufacturing companies for any of the supplies, whatever, I would say start by hiring more people from those groups, because you can't really replace. There's no good replacement for somebody's just lived experience and having that perspective on anything you're working on or doing. Even for my store, like I obviously was Black, but I had Hispanic and white employees. I tried to always have a female employee on staff, but just so we have those perspectives whenever we're working on things, I could genuinely ask, like, hey, is this a thing that's bothersome or offensive? Is this a thing that matters or doesn't matter to you? You know, and obviously they're not speaking for everybody of their group, but it's at least a starting point to have that conversation. And I don't know. I mean, is that something that you've noticed when you go into businesses and don't see anyone that's like you?
I think just people in general, you know, you hate to, or I would say, hey, you're uncomfortable if you walk into some place and you're the only person of your color, or, you know, could be ethnic background, could be, you could be the only, you know, girl in the building. Those are always weird.
And, you know, one thing I will say, I think several of us have been in the position before where you end up being the person of your group in that space.
Yeah.
And it's sad to say, in some cases, you kind of get used to it. But the reality is, the minute that person starts having extra stresses, starts feeling extremely uncomfortable, or anything, really, it starts to become harder and harder to go participate in that space.
Yeah.
So doing or having other people there that represent them or their ideas or whatever increases the odds that you can keep that person in the community, because there's at least a reference point for them to relate to, or somebody to at least acknowledge their issues or see their issues. What's something that you would say is also helpful to kind of make spaces more inviting?
I mean, you know, as we talked about, you know, Wizards is just giving us a planeswalkers of every, you know, every ethnicity, every background. Like, hey, if I see Teferi as I walk through the door, you know, Naya, that's Chandra, and Nyssa, you know, if you've got that art, you know, make sure it's not all pictures of Jace or Gideon, you know, which is a lot of times you don't even think about. You probably think like, hey, this is a cool magic poster. But yeah, just if you could have diverse artwork. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that, actually. There's, when I was at Wizards, there was a thing where we had visited. Okay, let's back up a little bit so I can give full context to this. So for people who don't know, back when Innistrad came out, stores were sent these large, I think they were like 6 or 7 foot window posters of Liliana with, I believe, is the Steve Argyle artwork from the Planeswalker card, Liliana the Veil. And the artwork's beautiful, but in typical early Liliana fashion, it is very sexualized, I guess is a nice way to put it.
I knew that's what you were about to say.
I mean, she's busty.
Yeah.
I mean, is that the light way to put that?
Yeah, I guess that's probably the most.
And when you go to a lot of, okay, another issue with them is that whatever those things are made from probably isn't healthy for humans because they never sun faded. There generally was a store I visited in California where they had Liliana in the window, and then about, I would say somewhere between 6 and 8 feet in, they had some of the old guild banners hanging. The guild banners that weren't even in the window were sun faded. The Liliana went up, looked like it went up yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah, so the problem is these things stayed in people's windows, and they never came down. Even as kind of culture changed and Wizards would no longer put that level of stuff on big window clings, they're still out there.
And by the way, that's not just something that's potentially offensive to women. I mean, it was from another card game, but it was a picture of Starfire, and it was the new 52 Starfire artwork where virtually nothing was covered. And a dad got up and basically took his kid out of a tournament because, I mean, there's basically a picture of a naked girl on the card, you know. And I understood because I got 3 kids.
And just so people know, like, that was a thing we were aware of, because one of the things Wizards does with part of the trade marketing team that deals with all the retailers is they do go out and visit stores. I mean, they all over the country, and they're collecting notes and talking about things. And that came up more than once. And I believe 2 years ago, with Hour of Devastation, they had sent out some Nicol Bolas ones to try to replace those in some windows. And it worked for a few, but others obviously still have the Liliana up.
Yeah.
But it's a thing that people started to acknowledge, like, that's a turnoff for people. Like, you come on, and like you said, you're bringing your kids in to whatever the event, come see the store. And it's just not something people necessarily want to see. Like, cool, yeah, it's nice fantasy artwork and all, but you didn't have anything else?
Yeah. I'm trying to convince my wife that these people are not degenerates in the place where I hang out. This isn't helping.
For sure. That brings up another point that everybody check the other players for just not having absurd, scantily clad anime artwork or whatever on their playmats and sleeves and whatnot. I've seen so many people just be upset, roll their eyes at it. I mean, I've actually had to tell people, dude, you just got to pick that up, man. This is not the time or the place. Especially if it's, I mean, even more so when you're like on a day you're trying to teach new people to play, or it's a day that people are bringing their kids in for like an open house type thing for the business. It's like, dude, why? Like, no, this is not the time at all. So yeah, that's definitely a thing.
You're going to be a victim of a sextortion scam if you keep carrying those things around.
Yeah, sure. Makes you a target. One of the other things, too, I would say could be really good to make spaces more inviting is actually engage those people from other groups that are unlike you when they come into your space. Like, if you notice a new person coming in and, I don't know, they're black, they're handicapped, whatever it is, invite them over, chit-chat, find out why they're there, where'd they come from, talk about whatever deck it is they're playing that night, how'd they find the store, how long have they been playing Magic? Like, letting them know that they have been seen and that they're appreciated and that you're trying to befriend them and bond with them on some social level, like, that goes a long way. And again, versus somebody coming in, feeling out of place, and then just never knowing anybody and maybe not coming back because the place felt off-putting.
Same questions you'd ask, you know, just your regular friend or somebody else that you're meeting for the first time, you know, because it's easy to go overboard. I've had people do that, like, where it's almost like, so we noticed you're black, you know, you don't do that. You know?
That's a good point, man. I've had that happen before. Yeah, don't over-accentuate the thing that makes them an individual. Because they're there to just participate in the game and the product and whatever, just like you are. They're there for the tournament. They're there for the new set release or pre-release or whatever it is. And just engage them as a player, as another person. Like, it doesn't matter that they're not 100% like you or not. That shouldn't even be an issue. Like, you're there to just bond over gaming. So, yeah, just engage the people. What else would you say is something else good that kind of falls into that space for being more welcoming?
Like you talked about, just you know, letting noticing people, just kind of asking them for their perspective, you know, when you're making decisions, like what kind of tournament, now I can't talk, what kind of tournaments would you play in? What kind of formats would you like to see? Is there anything, you know? Sometimes if you just ask people what we could do better, they'll tell you.
Yeah, I think asking people is a good point. You know, what if they mention they don't like something for whatever reason, at least give it the attention to check it out. That may be something you overlooked. I mean, one of the things I did in my store, which was small but made a difference for several people, was we would rearrange a store once or twice a year, depending on new products coming in or whatnot. And one of the things I always made sure of is we had a disabled customer. He was in a wheelchair. He would come through almost every week. So when he'd come in on Friday, I would have him wheel around the store just to make sure there was enough clearance comfortably for him in the wheelchair. Because if he had good clearance, then I knew anybody else who came in either in a wheelchair or on crutches or whatever with the cane, whatnot, would have no trouble getting through the aisles.
That's good.
And there were multiple times they said, like, oh man, that's really appreciated. It's awesome you put in that thought and whatever. And again, it wasn't a big thing, but it was just acknowledging that, like, yeah, these spaces can be a little difficult. It's awesome that somebody's taking the time to give that some attention.
And you're probably one of the only store owners they know that's done anything like that. It goes a long way.
Yeah, but I think that applies to a lot of things or a lot of people. You know, if you're at least checking yourself on the language you're using, or like we said, the decorations or decor of the place, or, you know, the playmats or whatever it is. Like, just paying attention to those little things, I think, go a long way. There's things that you kind of take for granted or you say, like, well, I don't really care. But it's okay, you may not care, but what about the person sitting next to you? Like, do they ever look uncomfortable? Do they ever, like, roll their eyes at the thing? Or do they ever say something that you kind of look at and go, like, well, I hadn't really thought about that. Like, stop and give that just 2 seconds more thought. And you'd be surprised the impact that can have. And it's one of those things where, like, I get it. There are people genuinely out there that are trying to do better and trying to be better. And hopefully these are at least just some thoughts or ideas that can change the way people are perceiving things.
You reminded me of one store I was in where I forget the name of the board game, which I tell you really isn't important, but it was actually kind of one of those civilization type setups, and one of the currencies or things you could trade in the game was slaves.
Oh, I wish I remembered the name of this game, because this came up, I want to say it was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, and for people that, you know, have played that game all the time and probably just, you know, probably never thought about it. They think about it the same way they think about sheep or, you know, land or anything else. Obviously, it's a historic type game. Slavery is a thing that happened, and people did get traded as if they were, you know, cattle. But you probably don't want this game, you know, at the front of your store.
For sure. For sure. I think that's totally legit. I would, to even piggyback on that statement, one of the things I would say is if you're a game designer or creator, or actually I would say anybody, honestly, that's putting up content to be on the front page of your websites or whatever, consider the people in the images that you're using. Because, again, having been in the game industry forever, like there are times where I could walk through and look at all of the people depicted on the covers of all these boxes, and there were little to no people of color on them. And it doesn't seem like a big thing, but those times you see it, it starts to stand out. That, yeah, you're like, oh, these people get it. Or, oh, they're trying to do something different. That's awesome. I appreciate that. And same thing on your website.
Especially the games are, you know, the theme of like, oh, this is, you know, world, this game depicts world history. Or it depicts all the civilization for the past 2,000 years. For real? Are you sure? Yeah, you're not showing it.
But I think that also applies to your websites and stuff too, yeah, though, right? If you're going to put an image up to say like, hey, here's our business or here's our store or these are the events we're trying to run, try to showcase some people of color. Try to showcase some women. You know, make sure that people can see the diversity of the people that come visit your business or your store, or whatever it is. I think that's also very important, because when people get to see others like them, it makes a big difference.
And we talked about, you know, like making sure it's genuine and that you're not trying too hard, because there was one marketing brochure I saw for somebody where it was clear they had hired actors, because we didn't know any of the people that were in the advertising material. Like, who, these people don't shop or work here? Did, yeah, you not know any people of color? If so, or if not, here's your problem.
Yeah, that kind of comes back to what we were talking about a little while ago. Like, don't, I don't know, like, don't be placating, really, I guess is the word. Like, patronizing, there you go. Like, don't, like, going out and getting fake images to put up, that's not going to do anything, because eventually I'm going to show up and be like, there's no black people here. What was this all about? When, you know, like that's worse, honestly. And if you're not there, cool. Start making efforts to get there. Like, I can accept it's fine. If that's not your clientele, whatever, cool. Well, now start taking the steps to change that.
If you got, let's say, 100 customers, somebody knows somebody. Somebody's got a cousin. You know, somebody's got a spouse or something. Even if you... somebody in your clientele knows some people of color. I promise you they do. I hope so.
And another thing, too, I want to say, for any of you that are organizing events outside of a store, say like a convention or something of that nature, a speaking engagement, consider who you have on your panels. Because I've seen a lot at several events and conventions I've been to where there are zero women or people of color on the panels. And I think you're going to find it is much less engaging when that's your group of speakers, because you already have listeners starting out with an understanding that these people are not going to have enough perspectives. These people are not going to, and especially depends on what the issues are you're talking about.
Yeah, the panel topic is representation in magic.
Yeah, whatever it is. You can't say like, oh, we're going to do this thing on diversity or representation or whatever, and your panel doesn't reflect that. Like, you can't tell me you can't hop on Twitter or Facebook or whatever and find people. Hell, all of these events have websites and social media, whatever, for people that are attending. You can't tell me you can't find somebody that can just be there and have some amount of relevance to the topic to hop on and participate. Like, it's insane that that even happens in this day and age.
Daquan and I are both available for your panels, your speaking engagements.
I'm always available, and I have spoken at events before. So I've got experience. If you want me, send me an email. I'll be there. I will always share positive messages and give perspective where it's needed to help people out. Matter of fact, we had a really good one where we were at MomoCon in Atlanta 2 years ago, I believe. And our panel was, it was me, an Asian guy, a bisexual female, and a white guy. And we talked about all kinds of stuff while we were on there. And it was a good discussion. And, you know, one of the interesting things is somebody even, we were questioning, like, well, why is a white guy on the panel or whatever when we're talking about these diversity issues? I said, well, he still has opinions and we're still friends with him. And he's still explaining, you know, well, these are ways that you can engage in the space to help make it more welcoming for all your friends and all these other people. You know, and we thought that was equally as important. So, yeah, there's a lot of ways you can do it and approach it, for sure.
And he's got to go talk to his friends and tell them, you know, what went on here today.
Yeah. So this is, like I said, it's just, this is just a topic that people have asked about. Like, they're trying to do better, trying to figure out ways to make their spaces more welcoming or make it better in the community. And we just wanted to take time to touch on a few of those things, to just have the discussion about what things can we do as a community to help and make these spaces better for everybody. And hopefully people have some good takeaways from this.
And if, hey, if y'all got ideas, please, by all means, you know, shout them out to us.
Oh yeah. I think this is something we can come back to, and we can probably talk about another three or four things people could probably do.
Absolutely. If people have some ideas that they've done already, by all means, let us know about them.
I'd love to give people a shout out. Yeah. If you have a cool thing you're doing in your store, or you have a cool community project you're doing, yeah, definitely let us know. Whether it's here, send me a DM over on Twitter, send me a message on Facebook.
Slide it into his DMs. That's right.
Yeah, for real. We'd love to give you some recognition for those efforts. 100%. Like, even if you're not comfortable being a full guest on the show for an episode, I would still like people to know that these other things are happening, or ideas that people can apply to other things. I mean, any way we can help or reach people in this space and kind of make things better, I'm for it. But I think that's going to do it for us this week. I think we covered a lot this episode, man. It
was like 10 episodes,
Yeah, that was a bunch of stuff. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social and what you have coming up?
All right. I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. As we mentioned earlier, I'm doing 100 straight days of uploads on YouTube. I'm streaming on Twitch on a somewhat regular basis. Stay tuned to my social media for that stuff, I guess.
As usual, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragn, on all social media things, including Twitch, where I am on day 19. By the time you listen to this, will be day 20 of 60, so I'll be officially one-third of the way through. We're going to be there every night for at least an hour, so you're welcome to come join me there. And yeah, if you just ever want to reach us, you know anybody you have that would be a good guest for the show, reach out, let us know. We're always looking for people to kind of help promote them and their projects in the POC space for sure. But on that note, we're going to call it good and get out of here, and we're going to enjoy some Mythic Championship coverage. So whenever you're listening, wherever you are listening from, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.